You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready, man?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good time?
Well, it sure was a good time. Actually, not that fun for a lot of the weekend as a Mariner fan, and then rewarding right at the end. That's kind of what baseball is. It brings you through the torture chamber only to reward you one day at the end. It's unique. It is a unique sport, and it's something I've loved since I was a kid. And that moment of gratification after the, whether it's innings or games or seasons or even decades, where your team finally pays off all of your heartache, all of the time you've spent, there's nothing quite like it. I can promise you that. There is nothing better in the entire world of sports fandom than finally getting over the top with a team that has driven you so crazy over the years. And you got to see a little bit of that yesterday, just sort of on the small scale, right? It had been a tough weekend. It looked like they had the game won on Friday night, only to have Paul Sewald blow it. And then Saturday kind of got away from them. Sunday looked like it was about to do the same. So when Ty France comes up with that hit to win the game yesterday, that is a huge moment for the Mariners. And I was asking folks, and you can text in your answer. I kind of got to see where people were at on Twitter, because I put a little Twitter poll up. What was the most important, impactful, best moment of the weekend for the Mariners? Was it Kelnick's home run, which I think you can make a strong case for because of getting him right? Right. And the way it sort of, you know, allowed him to get out of his head and shake kind of what's going. If he can get his confidence, and wow. Right. Mm-hmm. If Jared Kelnick gets confident, good luck. Was it the, you know, Abraham Toro home run yesterday to get them back into that game? Because without it, there is no extra innings. Was it George Kirby and his debut and all the energy that came with it and what he means for the future? Or was it Ty France just walking it off? And, you know, it's funny, as I kind of go through, you know, thinking about it, it might be France. Honestly, look, if Kelnick gets it, that would be so enormous to have him kind of unlocked with all of his potential. So that may end up being the moment that we kind of point back to. We'll wait and see. But at some point, you just got to win games. You've got to snap the losing streak. You've got to find a way. And so it was interesting. That was a distant third in the poll. But I think I could make you a strong case that it was the most important thing that actually happened for the Mariners this weekend. So you can text 206-421-3776. That is the Mac and Jack's text line. I've been keeping the faith, even as frustrating as it was this weekend, for three reasons. One, I just think they're better than they've shown.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just flat out, this offense is better than it's been. Jesse Winker's a better hitter than he's shown so far. Suarez, you got a chance to see it again on Friday night after kind of a downturn. His numbers at home are pretty good. Has anybody noticed Julio's numbers recently? Has anyone been paying attention to Julio?
Notice he's not striking out as much. He's out this last week.
No kidding. The numbers are pretty great. So this came from Jason Churchill. I was noticing a trend, and then when I saw his tweet, it was like, oh, yeah, there you go. Julio over his last 15 games, which is essentially half the season. 309, hitting 309, on base 367, slugging 455. So that's better than 800 OPS. And his strikeout rate is just barely above league average. He's striking out 25% of the time. The league average is 23. So he's right around where he should be league average, forgetting about the fact that he's a rookie and everything else that he brings to the table. He's been a positive force for the Mariners, which is why he ends up hitting in the three spot yesterday. It's time. It's time to start allowing Julio to be Julio. It doesn't mean he's got to stay there or do it, you know, once Haniger comes back and you can kind of lengthen the lineup. And certainly if Jesse Winker gets back to doing his thing. But what a great thing to see. So I do think they're just a lot better than they've shown so far. Two, it's going to be really fun when it turns around, right? Like, and maybe one and two or really even three are all connected to each other, but you know, when this thing gets going, we've seen what the electric factory can be and what, you know, the way this team seems to have fun with each other, the amount of chemistry that they have and sort of the love they seem to share. It's a group of pretty fun dudes. And if they can just get over the hump here, there will be weird, funny dugout antics and stuff on the bases and everything else, because it's a bunch of interesting, pretty cool dudes. So we got to see a little of that with the Kelnick home run and, you know, him practically tackling people as he came around the bases. And like, but some of those personalities that you have on this team, I think, are a reason to stick around and keep some faith. And then the final is that baseball has a habit of making you give up right before things get good.
Yeah, it's testing.
It tests
it's
you.
A constant test.
In a way that no other sport does. And that's not to say other sports don't test your patience or your fandom. They do. But a baseball team will bring you right to the point of quitting. I've never seen anything like it. I've told you before about my buddy Mike, who legitimately called me in August of 2004, Red Sox fan. He's like, I'm out. I'm an Angels fan. I can't do it anymore. I'm like, okay. Sorry, buddy. He's like, yep, don't call me about the Red Sox. I don't want to talk about it. I'm an Angels fan. I'll call you about Garrett Anderson.
August
like,
04.
All right, August 04.
Oh, man.
Obviously, he came back.
And I'm sure he's been reminded of this call a few times.
Every time I talk to him. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, remember August 04 you called me? But it's true, and poor Mike is not alone. Baseball does have – it brings you through the ringer, man. And, yeah, the last week or so was that for Mariners fans or, you know, the last 20 years, depending on how you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. I understand there's a relationship there. But certainly, you know, this team that had so much written about it and so much potential and so much promise and started off really well and gets himself into first place – and everyone felt like they weren't even hitting on all cylinders yet. Well, you got to see what that really looks like when they go in the wrong direction, because losing 10 out of 11 is obviously just a huge bummer and started to bring up shades for me anyway of 2010, right? They brought in Cliff Lee. That was Sean Figgins, Casey Kochman, et cetera, Believe Big. And it just, they didn't hit. Just couldn't hit. And it was starting to feel that way of like, one run game, one nothing, two, they scored two, they scored three. Where are the runs? And as you were watching yesterday, and nobody is scoring, nobody's getting on base, and when they do, they're not able to drive them in. It looked like it was going to be a one nothing loss in George Kirby's nearly flawless debut. It really was starting to feel shades of 2010, and I can understand if people feel like giving up. But that's why you don't, because just when you want to give up on baseball – you start with a runner on second and 10th inning, and you bunt him over with two strikes. Great job by Dylan Moore. And then eventually Ty France comes through with what I would say is the biggest hit they've had so far this year. And it was great. It was great to see and super important for the Mariners.
The pitch. Swing. Line drive. Sock left field. And this game is over. Kelnick scores. Ty France walk off base hit left field. And the Mariners win it in 10. Final score on this Mother's Day from Seattle.
Yeah, some good texts. 360 says, I was at the game Friday. Kelnick's energy around the bases was something special. 425 says, the Kelnick home run was great, but the two hits in the next 2 days is even better. It shows he's not trying to swing out of his shoes for huge production like he did after his foul pole shots. Yeah, I would agree with that. So, yeah, there you go. I mean,
baseball, that does the same thing to you as a player, too. Like, pushes you right to, like, nah, I don't know if I can do this anymore. This is a grind. And then one great game like that brings all of the baseball love.
Yeah.
And it's like the baseball gods, just a little tap, like, you're fine.
You know what else could do that a little bit is golf.
No. Yeah.
Think I'm going to quit. Think I'm terrible. Oh, I just birdied 15. That's pretty cool. All right. We'll come back, tell you everything you need to know, and then Maura and I will take you inside Seahawks rookie minicamp as we were there yesterday. So a lot still to come. Don't go anywhere. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The process matters. We've certainly learned that. But sooner or later, you got to have results to go with it, too. And thankfully, they got them yesterday. It looked like the Mariners were going to get swept all the way through by the Rays. Just a miserable weekend. Little Abraham Toro home run in the ninth to keep it close or to tie it up. And Ty France did his thing in the tenth.
The pitch. Swing. Line drive. Sock left field. And this game is over. Kelnick scores. Ty France walk off base hit left field, and the Mariners win it in 10. They take down the Rays 2-1, the final score on this Mother's Day from Seattle.
Yeah, big moment. The walk-off completed the comeback, snapped the six-game skid that was threatening to knock this season completely off the tracks. Great day at the ballpark. George Kirby made his major league debut. Personal cheering section right behind the plate and filthy stuff to go with it. Six innings he went. Shutout ball, seven strikeouts, only four hits and no walks. I don't know what else you could possibly ask for in his debut. He was tremendous. And they needed it, too, after the heartbreaker on Friday and a tough loss Saturday. Looked like Jared Kelnick had won them the game Friday night with a massive pinch hit bomb in the eighth. Only to have Paul Sewald blow his first save of the year. That was completely unexpected. Thankfully, they got the win yesterday. I felt like that was one of those moments where frustration could really seep in and change this whole season. Back at it tonight, though. Philadelphia in town for three. Should be a good chance for these bats to get going against the pitching staff that is not nearly in the same league as what we've seen here for the last couple of weeks. They are not Tampa, Miami, or Houston. They'll score some runs, but they're going to give up a bunch as well.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, rookie minicamp now in the books. Most of the draft picks were full participants throughout the 3 days. All of them, though, able to contribute in some meaningful way. Asked who stood out, Pete Carroll yesterday, definitive in his praise for his two new bookends on the offensive line.
I was so caught by the draft picks. You know, I thought everybody was able to show something. And the tackles jump out right off the bat. You know, that both guys look well-equipped physically. They look like they can move like we would hope they can move. They're both bright kids, and we'll pick up their stuff, so the process is underway. I was really fired up about that.
Yeah, there was certainly a lot to be fired up. They were athletic, and they do stand out. And if you just showed up with nobody had a number on or anything like that or a name, you weren't able to tell who was who, I think those would be two players you absolutely would have picked out just by watching. And certainly Abe Lucas, he just really is the stature. You couldn't help but notice. Physically powerful, intimidating kind of a dude. So pretty cool seeing those guys kind of do their thing. I'd also be shocked if they weren't both starting week one at tackle. Mentioned last week that KJ Wright would like to return to Seattle to finish off his career. Pete Carroll asked about that yesterday as well. His answer may be a little bit vague.
I've already talked to him about stuff for the future and all that. I did hear that he talked about playing, and we've already talked about that.
They've certainly talked. Whether or not that means he's likely to return here as a player, I would say it still seems very unlikely. It's just hard to see how he would fit. He doesn't rush the passer, and that's kind of what they need as a stand-up outside linebacker, and I don't think he's playing inside at this stage of his career in this system, so sort of hard for me to see how KJ Wright could contribute on the field to this system. But if there's a way for him to do something with the team, be around them, be a leader, yeah, I can absolutely see all the value. And I'm sure that's why Pete was talking to him. And I'm sure why he would find himself interested in a reunion in some way.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Tepa Center and Zozo's in behind them. Cyberknife swings up on the outside. Sandin gets the rail run, and they're into the stretch. And it's Fessier, Crown Pride, and Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandin is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandin, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter, Sandin, Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
He doesn't get mentioned until the last 4 seconds of that 35-second clip. Nowhere near it. What a great call. There's a few calls of derbies over the years that kind of stick with me. That one is probably going to be one of them. That's a great call.
Out of breath at the last word. It's just so good.
Well, and he had no idea he was there. All of a sudden, Rich Strike coming from behind for the win. Pretty tremendous. Wasn't even supposed to be there. Only added late because of a scratch. Halfway down the stretch, he was nowhere close. He was an 80-1 shot, longest odds in the field. As Moore said earlier, second longest shot of all time to win the Derby. Just amazing to watch. NBA action, two of the series that looked like they were going to be non-competitive are both now knotted at two. Dallas winning a couple in a row to get back in it. Same with Philly. James Harden really showed up last night, led the Sixers to a win. Milwaukee up 2-1 over Boston. They'll try to extend that lead tonight. Same with Golden State. They play against a Memphis team missing John Morant, which obviously is the only way they could be stopped in the playoffs. NHL, four series tied up at two yesterday. Wins by Boston, St. Louis, Tampa, and Los Angeles. It's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour.
Have you yet been to a game yet? The Mariners game?
No, I've yet to be down there. It's something I need to remedy. You were there Friday?
I was Saturday. Mm. The whole family and I was Saturday. Sat in section 321.
Okay.
So shout out to the my people up there that I got to chat with for a little while.
Okay.
Went to the value menu. Definitely hit that up. So you got some junior dogs for $3.
Nice.
Those are nice. And froze.
Really? A little chilly out there?
Very cold.
Yeah, the weather here has just been ridiculous. And like... I mean, I'm trying not to complain about it. It's a happy day. The Mariners won.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Mother's Day weekend. Everybody's positive.
Man, Moore and I were standing out yesterday at rookie minicamp, and we were inside. We were in the bubble. It was freezing in there. Alonzo Highsmith, who is a great running back in his days, now working with the Seahawks, he was walking around like, man, it's freezing in here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No kidding.
I thought Rich Gonzalez, I think he was joking about me looking like I was wearing a parka, but I felt good.
You should have.
I wore my big winter coat.
God, it was my feet. My feet felt like they were frozen after standing out there for an hour. Like, what is going on here?
No,
I saw somebody text earlier that they call this Movember, and they're not wrong. What are we doing? It is time for this thing to turn around.
Talked to my dad in Colorado Springs last night. They just had an 80-degree day.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Yeah.
Not happy about hearing
dry,
that at all.
Dry 80 degrees.
Yeah, I'm not okay with hearing that at all. Bring on the 80 degrees. All right. More, as I said, we were there yesterday, and I got 7 or 8 different observations, including what might be the largest human I've ever seen. And apparently, I'm not alone, because Pete Carroll's on my side. It's next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
It was great to be over at the Seahawks rookie minicamp this weekend. Moore and I went over yesterday and got a chance to watch them, mostly doing kind of walkthrough speed stuff. So we'll talk to Brady Henderson and get a sense as to what the whole practice looked like over the course of the weekend. Brady will join me here in an hour. But a couple of observations, because there were plenty of things to notice being there. The first was the tackles looked awesome. Abe Lucas is definitely the first guy I noticed. And I think, honestly...
Yeah, you were all about him. Well, he just kept saying, God, look at him.
Well, that's true.
You had a little Brock in you.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. That's kind of all there is to look at in a practice like that. All you're really doing is looking at their bodies and the way they move. So it is very easy to get into kind of creepy Brock territory where you're like, look at that guy's shoulders. Oh, my God, his lats. And like, yeah, it's pretty easy to get into Brock territory. So I apologize if this segment kind of veers into some body judgment and stuff, but... Abe Lucas looks like a prototypical NFL athlete at tackle. He is big. He looks physical. You can see how he gets the reputation for being mean. Like, honestly, as I was saying earlier, if you were dropped down and didn't know any of the players, right, if you had to watch them all blind where they didn't have uniforms on or jersey numbers on, you couldn't cross-reference it, you would have pointed and been like, who's that guy? He looked like the biggest, most powerful, most physical guy in the room. So, you know who he... who did he remind me? I'll see if I can come up with the right name, because there have been a few other guys over the years that kind of share his stature. I'll see if I can figure it out. I mean, Dwayne Brown always looked like a ridiculous athlete and all that, and maybe that would be a pretty good comp, right? Like, just athletic looking at his size. Yeah, maybe it is Dwayne Brown that I might compare him to, from a body type standpoint.
You could immediately notice that compared to what Mike Solari liked, these guys look longer and leaner, but there's definitely still some muscle mass there.
He looks long, lean, and mean. Like it's not just like a tall, it's a basketball player that put on a few pounds. No, he looks like he looks like a power lifter or something.
Yeah.
Like just really physical.
But
and
also,
then,
they were moving around really well and looking agile, which I like to see because, I mean, Dwayne Brown's been phenomenal, but I do think his body's been a little worn down.
A lot of worn down, which is why he hasn't found a job yet. I mean, like, we're on to phase 3 of free agency. Dwayne Brown still looking for a home somewhere. So, you know, Pete, I think, was really impressed with the tackles. And I think one of the big questions is both guys came from these air raid systems where all they did was drop back into pass protection. So how ready are they for what the Seahawks want to do?
They've been working hard at it, and they look very comfortable. They'll get better. I mean, I saw a couple of false, you know, flinches and stuff, but which is really normal. Like I've said, these guys are too good athletically. I mean, they're really comfortable in their bodies and can move, and they're well proportioned, and they're quick, and they can run fast for big guys. It's just it's not going to be a big transition like, you know, we might think. And I don't think that the experience of being in the offense they've been is going to be a detriment at all. I think it's going to – the area most that we would be concerned about is pass protection, you know, and being able to pick up with the speed. And all these guys have had thousands of snaps of protecting on the edge.
It's essentially all they've done for the course of their college careers. So really good stuff there. I would also put – Brock always likes to ask – coaches in college whenever he talks to them, like, who would you want with you if you met some, you know, rough characters in a dark alley? And Abe Lucas is definitely that guy for me so far. So yeah, I'm all over that one. All right, some other observations. Let's see, Ken Walker the third, a little smaller than I expected him to be. Now, I'm sure he'll look bigger in pads. They weren't wearing pads yesterday, but he was a little smaller than I expected him to be. I've watched highlights of him, and he's a great sort of combination of quickness and jukes and some power in there as well. Good for him for generating that power at just over 200 pounds. Pete, pretty impressed with the speed.
Yeah, Ken, he took off now. He's a rocket. He caught the ball really well today, too, which we're really excited about. Our offense in the terminology and the concepts that we've run, he's run before. And he was well-prepared at Michigan State coming to us. He understood even the terminology to some extent, too. So it's going to really facilitate him being comfortable with the transition. So we'll expect no issues there at all. He'll be able to go. He's very bursty, very quick.
He's very bursty.
Bursty.
Yeah. I want to be known as bursty. I'm not, really, but I wish that I was. He is bursty. He was, I don't know, were you surprised at all? He looked a little smaller than I thought he'd be.
Yeah, it was hard to tell. He did have a hoodie on. Sometimes when these guys have their arms out, all of a sudden they look a lot bigger. Like, because I saw a picture of Boye Mafe the other day where he had his sleeves rolled up, but we didn't see that yesterday, and it makes them look much bigger.
Dude, when Boye Mafe rolled up his sleeves, dear Lord, is he rocked up. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, so Ken Walker, bursty. Fast, and maybe
and small. It looked smaller than you thought.
Looked a little smaller than I thought he would be. Speaking of people, let's go exactly the opposite. Tariq Woolen. Oh my God, he is a cool looking athlete, huh? He is tall and lean and big and fast. If they can make that work, if he can complete the transition and become a cornerback and do all the things that they want him to do and be fluid back there, he looks like you end up being the best cornerback in the league. Like, obviously, that's an exaggeration to make about a kid who's barely played the position, was just chosen in the fifth round, and had to sit out part of his rookie minicamp with a hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. So I understand that it's a little far to say that he could be the best cornerback in the league. But just looking at the guy, you can start to imagine a scenario in which he Richard Sherman's, except that he's better because he's faster and just physically bigger. He's gigantic for the position. So
6'4"?
Yeah. Yeah, almost 6'5", right? He's like over 6'4". And just he looks big, but he's got the speed, and we didn't really get a chance to see him in, you know, coverage or anything, but
he could only do walkthroughs because he's got a sore hamstring and that they don't want to test.
Yeah. Well, he also, you know, there's only so much, you know, real coverage you can do in a mini camp like that. He looked like a thicker Trey Flowers to me, right? I mean, he sort of had more of that build. We were wondering if he would look sort of like Tharald Simon or Trey Flowers or Sherm. He looked like Trey, but a little bit bigger, I would say. And then we'll find out, you know, how they use him and whether or not he can do it. But if he can actually play some bump and run jam coverage, like, I don't know, if he gets his hands on you, it feels like it could be very Brandon Brownery.
Yeah, and Pete was actually asked about a comparison to Trey Flowers, and he said that even though Woolen has transitioned from receiver to corner and it's new to him, that he's further along than Trey Flowers was when they got him because they moved him from safety to cornerback after that.
Yeah, so he's been doing this at least for a couple of years, and I don't know whether he will be Brandon Browner. Browner was a big dude, real big. Like 220. I mean, he was too big to be a corner. The fact that he made it work is ridiculous. I'll be interested to see if this guy's got a little Browner in him or if it's more of the sort of, you know, drop back and use the speed kind of a thing. But fascinating player. He's one of those people where you can't take your eyes off him and you kind of just want to see where he is at all points, kind of what he's doing. Very, very interesting and fun to watch. Now, by far the most interesting person there, and it's not close, is this dude named Nick Paul. He's out of a Division 1 AA school or D2 school called Northeastern State in Texas. Never heard of the school. Small school. Not a small guy. Listed. Listed, Justin, At 385 pounds,
oh boy.
Pete says there's no chance that he's well over four bills.
I mean, the only guy I've seen that big in my life is Dave Baker, who used to run the Hall of Fame.
Hold on. That's underratedly funny. Have you ever seen David Baker, who runs the Hall of Fame?
Nope.
He's like seven foot five. He's gigantic.
He towers over anyone that he knocks on the door of to tell him they made the Hall of Fame.
Kyle Brown hates him. Hates him.
Why?
Like, absolutely hates David Baker.
By the way, Northeastern State in Oklahoma. He's just from Houston.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. He hates David Baker. Thinks he makes the whole Hall of Fame about himself. Like, every time Hall of Fame time comes around, Kyle goes on a rant.
Such
about
a weird guy to hate when most people don't even really know who he is.
He hates David Baker and Sister Jean from Loyola. Like, those are Kyle's two big pet
Because
peeves.
She makes it about herself, too. Kyle's not a fan making it about yourself.
He's very consistent.
This is the biggest man I ever saw now. He did okay. You know, I looked at him down there, and we were doing the bags. It's about 30 yards of running, weaving through the bags, and I thought, I was thinking about Nick, and he's looking at those bags, and I'm like, oh, man, that's a long ways down there, you know, take those four bills plus and go show what he can do. But he worked hard today, and admire that, you know, that he came out and gave it a good effort first day. We'll see. Take it one day at a time.
Pete, I know Brock gets grief as sort of being the body guy around here at times, but Pete's very much the same way. Like, he is obsessed with people's bodies, how they look, what they're doing, their size, etc. And
I mean, at least his has a place.
Well, the dude is gigantic, and honestly, it's sort of an oddly shaped 400 pounds too.
Yeah.
He's got kind of a high butt and like weird shoulder. Like, well, he's huge.
You don't look at him and think that he looks like severely overweight or anything. It was very like upper body strong.
Yeah, he's in. It's
like he's very just like a refrigerator up top.
So funny. He's huge. And by the way, he was an offensive lineman in college, so they're kind of sticking him at nose tackle where he's never played before.
Did you see him?
he just keeps giggling about it. So funny.
He has any clue about taking care of business in there? You can't tell which gap he's lining up on. You know, so it'll be a
wow.
I'm sorry, it's so funny. This, like, it's so old school, like, just like Pete, like, laughing about a gigantic human. It feels like something that would have been in an 80s football movie.
Problem for the offense right from the beginning.
The 385 on the roster, that's
pick it up a bit. I don't think the scale even registered what he was. We went to an alternative scale.
What?
Have you ever heard of?
No.
It's so funny, man.
Somebody just texted in, the dude looks like Finch and Wildcats.
He does a little bit.
The movie you're referencing?
Yeah. I mean, Finch didn't really want to play, though, so they had to have Peanut cut his legs out from behind and knock him over on top of a couple dudes, so he just pinned them, and then they were just lying there like squashed bugs. But, yeah, he's got kind of a Finch thing. Hopefully he's as smart as Finch and able to get up and block the big kick when
Someone asking if he's bigger than Ted Washington. I haven't seen Ted Washington in person. You did, right?
I have seen Ted Washington in person. I think he's taller. He's built differently from Ted. Ted was wide. He was probably wider than this guy. But Nick Paul's gigantic. And, you know, look, in the past, there might not have been room for him in this roster, to be honest with you. Going to a 3-4 where you need a huge nose tackle, who, as Pete said, you can't tell which gap he's in because he's in two at once. Well, they want guys to two gap. So he's probably not going to make the roster. Is he a practice squad candidate based on the fact that he's from a smaller school and didn't play this position until now? Yeah. It's kind of an interesting, you know, how the Seahawks like this, to see if they can find somebody with a body that's been used the wrong way and see if they can use it the right way. And so I love it. I really hope that ends up working out. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Do you remember the school you went to?
I think it was Northeastern State.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find him on Twitter.
It's in Oklahoma.
Okay.
I found another guy with his name, but it listed him as only 285 pounds.
Me too, and that's not like
that's not him. Nope, okay. No chance. This guy couldn't have been 285 when he was 7 years old. He's huge. He really, have you ever heard Pete talk like that?
No.
It's so funny. I wanted to point out one other thing that we saw there. It's not necessarily about a specific person, but it was a very, very cool moment that I've not seen before, and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. So At the end of practice, they all kind of gather together, right, in a big group, offense, defense, everybody kind of gathers around, and there's some hooting and hollering, and then they kind of get quiet, right, while the coaches are talking, and then there's more hooting and hollering, and then they get quiet again. And then right before they ended their practice, they had a little competition. Now, you know Pete loves competing, right, compete every day, and they didn't really have kickers there, at least that I saw, so they weren't going to do sort of a kickoff or anything like that. And okay, they can't really, there's no real, you know, contact or anything like that. So it's not like they're going to do like old Oklahoma drills where dudes just go attack each other in the circle. So you know what they did? Jump balls with a football. So like NBA
tips.
Oh, like
a basketball jump
ball. Yes. So they would put two guys in the middle of the circle and jump it up. Over and over, and they probably did it, what, 10 times? And guys were going crazy, yelling, cheering, loving it. I thought it was brilliant because it's kind of a, you know, it lets guys compete in a way that's relevant to football and their athleticism, but without having any real fear of contact.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was awesome.
When you guys were talking jump ball earlier, I thought it was more of like they're passing it.
No, no, no. It was like a legitimate NBA jump ball where they were tipping it back to their teammates and trying to win the toss.
Got it.
It was fantastic. And I think it probably speaks to this cut from Pete where, yeah, they're trying to learn about these guys and trying to learn who's who, and it's a tryout for a lot of them. But it's also indoctrinating them into what it means to be on this team.
But we wanted to learn a lot about our players as much as we could and in a weekend's time about who they are, and also to try to gain as much as we can about them as football players. And meanwhile, we were letting them know about who we are and what they can expect about being part of this program and this culture. And it worked out really well. It was fun. We had a good time doing it. They worked really hard. They just studied every second. We filled up their days as much as we could. And they got Seahawks 24/7 when they're here, so it was great. So on we go.
They got Seahawks 24/7, and I think that's just another good example of, you know, what it means. And that's one of the reasons guys like KJ and all these other dudes want to come back and be here. I think there is something to that atmosphere, something to the environment that Pete and his team end up creating. And I thought it was pretty cool being down there yesterday. Let's talk to Brock.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Michael.
Have you heard any of the sound of Pete talking about Nick Paul?
No.
Oh, you're going to love this. I'm so glad you haven't heard it yet. I can't wait to play this for you. I have two cuts of Pete. So Nick Paul's 385 pounds, right?
Kind
nose
of,
tackle move.
Kind
for,
of.
Well, right. Well, that's part of the story here. Okay. But anyway, listed at 385. Here's Pete talking about him.
I mean, the only guy I've seen that big in my life is Dave Baker, who used to run the Hall of Fame. This is the biggest man I ever saw now. He did okay. You know, I looked at him down there and we were doing the bags. It's about 30 yards of running, weaving through the bags. And I thought, I was thinking about Nick and he's looking at those bags and I'm like, oh, man, that's a long ways down there, you know, take those four bills plus and go show what he can do. But he worked hard today and I admire that, you know, that he came out and gave a good effort first day. We'll see. Take it one day at a time.
You like that? That's right up your alley.
Why am I just picturing Kyle Brown's impersonation?
Well, I know, and how much he hates David Baker. Here's some more.
Did you see him? If he has any clue about taking care of business in there, you can't tell which gap he's lining up on, you know, so it'll be a problem for the offense right from the beginning.
385 on the roster. That's
dig it up a bit. I don't think the scale even registered what he was. We went to an alternative scale.
Brock.
I texted you and said what?
Is that the big fella at 66, right?
Yeah, but even more so. I've never seen numbers on a jersey look so small.
Yeah, like stretched across them.
In my entire life, it looked like a baby jersey. And trust me, if you or Maura or Justin put that 66 on, whatever it is, 5X, it would hang to your feet.
Right.
It looked like a baby jersey. The 66 didn't even stretch like nipple to nipple. It was just like a bib.
Dude.
It was tiny on him. I'm honestly, he devoured that jersey.
Well, I think what's so great, like Pete's seen a lot of big dudes. I mean, think about some DJ Fluker and some of the big guys that we've seen around here over the years. And Pete's like, yeah, nothing compared to this guy.
No. He must have been, was he 6'8"?
Yeah, 6'7", somewhere in that range.
6'7", 6'8".
He's got an
plus.
Interesting build, too. Like, he's not that wide. I mean, he is, but he's maybe it's just sort of like it doesn't.
And he's a converted O-lineman,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because he's kind of got some height to him, and it's like a high butt, high waisted thing.
Yeah.
Dude, he was fascinating to watch. It was pretty cool being over there. So, to more of the real story of guys that are going to make this team. The talk was the tackles, and for good reason. If these two dudes work out and they end up with bookend tackles drafted, what does that do for an organization in this offense?
Well, let's turn back the clock to pre-Mike Salk dates and turn it back to Walter Jones and Hutchinson. Not even bookend tackles, but just the most dominant offensive line in the league. And what did that do in 04 and 05 and 06 and took you to a Super Bowl? And yeah, I mean, it builds a foundation. Philly has been very, very good and some different moving pieces at times, but it's had arguably the best offensive line. Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger, right? Even in DK over the last 4, 5, 6 years is able to put together a top offense because they have one of the best offensive lines. That is when that position group is right. And I've always argued this. When that position group is right, there's no more dominant position group on a team because there's five of them. And they usually, when combined, weigh over a ton or near close to it, right? And it's a ton of personality. It's a ton of enforcement. It's a ton of enthusiasm. My favorite football team I ever played on, bar none, was the 96 Huskies. When you got in a huddle and you're like, yeah, doesn't really matter what's facing us across on the other side. Olin Krutz and Benji Olsen and Bob Sapp and Tony Coates and Mustafa Sobey and others. Lynn Johnson, let's go. Let's go. I will take my chances with anybody. And obviously Marshawn stirred the drink. But let's not forget Russell Okung, Bruno Giacomini, Max Unger, James Carpenter. That crew that moved people, how much fun was that, Mike? How much fun was it in 2012 and 2013 and 2014 when you were the enforcer? How much fun is it on a hockey team when you've got a couple enforcers? And, yeah, I mean, we're putting the cart well before the horses here because these are two incredibly young guys that have a change in system and are going to have to learn the NFL game and speed and everything else. There will be bumps in the road, but to your question, like if that's right, it sets the foundation for your entire team.
By the way, we got a texter here wondering if Nick Paul is built like the Big Show, the wrestler. I don't think so, but you're close. He's almost built more like the Big Boss Man. If you can remember back in the day, you remember the Big Boss Man?
Kind of.
He's kind of built like that guy. That guy was also 6'7".
Well, give me the closest Seahawk the last 10 years.
There's none. There's none. There's nobody that has looked like him.
And
Brock.
He's not Ted Washington, right?
No, because he's
blocks
taller.
Out the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's wow. Gilbert Brown. No, Gilbert was short and squat. Like
right.
This guy is unique, man. You gotta get a chance to see him.
Well,
if you come
said
down
I
camp.
Texted you full transparency for our audience.
Yeah.
I texted you knowing you were going over there yesterday and said, you know, just give me your thoughts.
Yeah.
And you thought Abe Lucas was as striking as anybody?
He was
outside
the person,
of 66.
He was the person that jumped out most. I think that if I was telling more, if you just saw numbers notions. But didn't know who the names were or anything, you'd be like, who's 72? That guy's the best player on the team.
Yep.
Yeah, he just really stood out.
You know, and kudos, honestly, to Mike Leach and that staff that recruited him. Because I told you, when I met him at Archbishop Murphy, either as a freshman or a senior in high school, he was 6'6", huge hands, but he couldn't have been 240 pounds. And it's very easy for people at times, and a lot of folks make a ton of mistakes projecting, going, oh, yeah, he can weigh 300. Yeah, we'll put 60, 80, 90, 100 pounds on him, and he'll be able to play. You don't know that. Right. You better be pretty good at what you're doing. You better be pretty skilled at, you know, and I'm not going to go crazy into the body, you know, projection game, but you better be right. Otherwise, knees, hips, backs blow out. I've seen it. Oh, yeah. He could put on 50 pounds. No, he can't.
Mm.
No, he can't. His frame can't do that. Abe Lucas's frame put on 70, 80 pounds, and you saw it, Mike. He still looks like an athlete.
He looks like he could go run yes. a mile without a problem.
Yes.
It was pretty cool seeing it. Do you remember your rookie minicamp? Did they do that then?
Did not have a rookie minicamp.
They didn't do
got
that?
Got thrown right to the Wolves.
Yeah.
Took my shirt off, got fined, nearly choked out by House Ballard.
It's a rough start.
Kitna buried me when we went into the locker room. I thought we were in the trust tree, and I was like, do you think our coach smokes? QB coach, do you think he smokes? His teeth are just, and I'm like right next to him. They're like, brown. And so, of course, we come back in the meeting, and Kitna's like, hey, coach, Brock's got a question for you. I'm like, what? No, I don't. Yeah, Brock's got a question for you. No, I don't. Yeah, you do. You were asking about his teeth in the locker room.
Jeez. Right?
So, oh, yeah. Yeah. So I got thrown right.
You could have used a rookie minicamp.
Fire. Oh, yes, I could have. Very much so.
Just a bunch of other rookies hanging out, kind of making mistakes together.
Oh, no. I got served a big, fat piece of humble pie right in my face. Ran blue right F short, two jet flanker drive. My first completion was to Brian Blades, who I grew up watching. Threw it to him. Why? I have no idea. When Holmgren asked, what were you looking at? The linebackers. Right. Yeah, sure. Whatever. Try to come up with something for a game.
Staring at the linebackers.
Yeah. Game flying by me. Coach. I read it all the way. Linebackers dropped out of there. When in actuality, I'm like, okay, no Brian Blades. Get open. Throw it to him. Okay, good. Kind of. Not really.
What'd you think of Kelnick's celebration on Friday night?
Solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid.
Dude, he almost killed people. He was so pumped up. He's like practically punching Julio. It was pretty good.
What did I think of Kirby?
Yeah, what'd you think of Kirby?
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah, I'm a lot more into this now. Titus has found one of his passions, which is pitching. And so we go to a guy and get to study this biomechanics stuff, and we watch these guys a little differently, and Kirby is smooth. I said to you, I'm concerned about Brash. It just didn't feel – it just felt erratic, right? I don't know how sustainable it felt just because the motion was everywhere. Kirby is locked and loaded. I'm not going to say Mark Pryor effortless.
Well, that's the comp for me.
It's along those lines.
Yeah, the difference, though, honestly, he throws like Pryor, right, just because it looks like he's playing catch. Mm. But I think the better comp that I've heard is Roy Halladay just because of the amount of arm side run that he's got. Oof. I mean, like – Prior
Titus
looked
asked
pretty
me that
straight.
Yesterday. Yeah, he's like, we were watching, and it was 97 up and away. And he's like, what pitch was that? And I was like,
they say it's a four-seamer, but it moves like a two-seamer.
It does. Yeah. He said, how does it move so much that, like, side to side?
He just has, I think it's just natural to his delivery. He just has crazy arm side run, which makes it pretty fun to watch. So.
Super fun.
All right, buddy. Good to talk to you. We'll do it later.
Okay, pal.
All right, there you go. There's Brock Heward every morning, 7:45 and 9:30. Coming up next, all right, I want to get back into this Mariners weekend because there were some really meaningful parts to it, and I want to tell you about five of them that all contributed to a hopefully better, greener pastures ahead. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710.